This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It is a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. On the last hour, Nicole, have we heard from the Washington State Board of Health? Any updates?
They emailed me that they're still working on it.
What? I just want to know, where's the data that says how many kids under 15 in Washington State have been hospitalized and how many have died from COVID?
The actual quote from the email is, triaging your inquiry. I like that.
How governmental is that? Who talks like, why does government always think that it can talk like that to try to make up for their inefficiency? Triaging your inquiry?
Sounds fancy.
It sounds deadly. okay, so as we start injecting babies with experimental vaccines, we still do not know why the Center for Disease Control national website says no child under 15 has ever died in Washington from COVID, and we do not know why this data has disappeared from the Board of Health data dashboard in Washington State. If you have thoughts on why this possibly could be, I wonder if it would slow sales for Moderna and Pfizer if we actually gave parents facts. And if that's the case, in all seriousness, how just purely evil is this? Not anti-vax. I'm always going to give that disclaimer that I'm not anti-vax. But how purely evil would it be to remove information that might be critical for parents to make a decision about whether they should inject their child, and they remove it because it might hurt business for pharmaceutical companies? I mean, if government and pharmaceutical companies are colluding to that level and everybody else in the media is covering it up besides the Dory Monson show, how evil is that to not give parents information so that they can make an informed decision about whether they should inject something into their little babies? We're on top of it. So when did you get that triage response, Nicole? Nicole, where'd Nicole go?
Hey, sorry.
Where'd you get that triage response?
The Department of Health?
Yeah, but when?
When? Oh, yeah. 12:15?
Oh, so after we started the show today.
Yes. But, you know, I don't think that they're paying attention to what time I needed it and what time our show is. I think they're just answering my questions.
Well, I know, but we've been asking for 3 days now, and it's pretty critical that we get this information out to parents as they start making this decision. There's something hinky going on here, I am telling you. All right, we will stay on top of it. We will stay on top and continue to try to get information that parents may want to have as they make these decisions for their babies. All right, let's get into the Fast 15 here. As we told you a couple of days ago, the city of Seattle has an enormous spending problem. Now, it turns out I am the only media entity that accurately describes it as a spending problem, because what the city of Seattle said is we have a $117 million revenue shortfall, but we're giving the city more tax dollars than we've ever given it before. They don't have a revenue shortfall. They have a spending problem. And so where are they spending all of this money that they've blown a more than $100 million hole in the city budget? Well, could it be? Do you remember during the Summer of Love, just 2 years ago, and Jenny Durkin finally, to get back the East Precinct and to get back six blocks of Capitol Hill in the Chaz Chop Zone, Jenny Durkin agreed to pay $100 million ransom to Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities. And she specifically said at the time that it would not come from new revenue. She's just going to find $100 million to invest in the next year. Well, guess what? Apparently, Jenny Durkin kept that promise to pay ransom. I do think that Chaz Chop was an act of domestic terrorism. I don't think that any politician worth anything negotiates with terrorists. And Jenny Durkin said, oh, if you give me back the East Police Precinct, and if you clean up that little mess where you're murdering and raping all of those people, if please do that, and I'll give you $100 million. Well, now, guess what? Chickens come home to roost. As the city of Seattle says, we have a $117 million revenue shortfall. Now it's a spending overage. But she said that she was going to give that money to the Movement for Black Lives, that a task force of community members had decide how it'd be spent. And now again in 2022, more young black and brown people are dying from murders in Seattle than in any time in the last 30 years. So the investment, Jenny, hasn't helped. How about Jenny Durkin, who's with her partners worth an estimated $300 million? Well, Jenny, why don't you do the city a little solid here? Since you're the one that paid the $100 million ransom, and since the city doesn't have that money, and now they say they have to raise taxes so that they can close the budget's revenue shortfall, why don't you just pay it, Jenny? You won't even notice that it's gone. You and your partner with your $250 million wealth, if you got $250 million, you pay for the budget gap that you created, you'll still have $150 million. Won't change your lifestyle one bit, Jenny. Should I hold my breath for that to happen? Because I'm pretty sure my face will turn blue if I do. All right, up next in the Fastest 15, and then Pike Place Market has gone woke with its bit of virtue signaling. A couple days ago on Juneteenth, for 2 days, the June 19th and then the day where people got off on June 20th. It says public in huge neon letters, Public Market Center. Well, they blacked out all but three of the letters. They left lit the B. I'm sorry, the L and the M. Let me pull it. No, the B and the L in public. They blacked out the P-U-I-C. They left the B-L, and then on the next word below, they only lit the M in market. So at the Pike Place Market, the Public Market Center sign said B-L-M. The problem is the M was way to the left of the B. Looks like it said MBL, which is the Marine Biology League, by the way. But a lot of people, they were getting toasted on social media. I took my family there today. Never again. Last time it was mental people hassling us. Today it was wall-to-wall people. Now I see this. Maybe if I was wearing my BLM propaganda loyalty pin to be in the cool kids club, I would have had a better experience. Or maybe not. Another person said, what does the Bureau of Land Management have to do with Juneteenth? All fair questions, but the virtue signaling is taking place all over our region still. And then you have at the national level, one thing that I think unites us, do we have the greatest vice president ever? Kamala Harris. Oh, my gosh, she's good. She's really good. And when she takes over for Joe after the Republicans get control of Congress and impeach Joe Biden, They, you know what? They would never impeach Joe Biden if Kamala's waiting in the wings. Guarantee you that. But it's just lovely every time I hear Kamala Harris talk, because I know that we're in good hands. She went on with Joy Reid.
We all sat and watched the Ketanji Brown Jackson hearings, in which she very calmly sat through what I think a lot of, particularly black women, let's just be honest, felt was brazen disrespect from senators like Lindsey Graham, senators like Tom Cotton, senators like Josh Hawley.
But it wasn't brazen disrespect what Clarence Thomas went through, a black man, or what Kavanaugh went through. There was no, this is the first time ever in Supreme Court nominee hearings that there was blatant or brazen disrespect.
What did you think when you watched that hearing?
I will tell you.
Oh, that was so boring. Maybe we can just boil this whole interview down to the very best part. Nicole put this together. This is the highlights of the Kamala Harris interview with Joy Reid.
Joy. I experienced great joy. And I watched that with incredible joy. And I cannot wait to see. That will only be matched by the joy that I experience when I see her take the oath.
Joy, joy, joy. Joy to the world. And then at the White House today, they were asked about gas prices hitting another new high, approaching $8 a gallon now in California. Donald Trump called this almost exactly right on the timetable and the amount that it would grow to. Although we are seeing some research suggesting that we could have $10 a gallon gas by the end of the summer. But the White House spokesperson made a little Freudian slip today.
I mean, the president has been very clear in making sure that he does everything that he can to alleviate the pain that American families are feeling when it comes to gas prices.
So, she started by saying that Biden was doing everything to elevate the pain, but then she quickly changed it to alleviate, which isn't even a word. Alleviate is, but alleviate. But she started to say that Biden elevated everyone's pain.
To alleviate.
And finally, I'm enjoying the Tucker Carlson, Stephen Colbert feud. Tucker Carlson calling out the Colbert staffers arrested at the Capitol, much like some insurrectionists on January 6th. Colbert on Monday night just lied about how they got arrested. And Tucker Carlson last night responded to Colbert. This is a pretty good little media feud here.
You watch a comedian, you think that guy's hilarious. I'd love to meet him. Imagine eating a meal with Stephen Colbert. Chances are you somehow offend him over the course of a typical dinner by saying something he finds offensive. What are the chances of that? 100%. Stephen Colbert is a Karen. He's a brittle, middle-aged woman who's always lecturing you about something. In fact, he's Elizabeth Warren. They even look alike. Have you seen them in the same room recently? No. Sad. He was talented at one point. So was Robert Smigel. That's one of the Colbert employees who was also arrested last week. Smigel's been doing his dog puppet routine for 30 years. That's the one that Colbert is now hiding behind. It was just a dog puppet. The dog puppet was kind of funny during the Clinton administration. It is pure hackery now. Smigel keeps going because he's got a political message for you. I'm going to beat you over the head with my political message. Ah! No one laughs at Robert Smigel anymore. It's pathetic. Who's funnier, Robert Smigel or the guy who took pictures of himself at Nancy Pelosi's desk on January 6th? Be honest. It's not even close. The guy at Pelosi's desk is hilarious compared to the guy with the talking dog. And none of them is half as funny, again, sorry, it's true, as Donald Trump. And how do you know that? Show us the late night host who said anything half as amusing as Trump's Taco Bowl tweet.
Colbert, ball's in your court. All right, that is your Fastest 15. Coming up right after we check the news. I'm looking forward to this. I'm going to talk to that Google scientist who says that artificial intelligence may have become sentient during a chat that he was having with it. He has been put on leave by Google because of the firestorm that's erupted from his comments. We will talk to him next here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we told you the story of a Google engineer who said that an artificial intelligence program he had been chatting with had, he was convinced, become sentient, which would have enormous consequences for mankind, for society. I'm fascinated by the subject, and I'm thrilled to say that Google engineer Blake Lemoine joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Blake, it's great to talk with you this afternoon, sir.
Oh, great to talk to you as well.
This is quite the firestorm you find yourself in the middle of. I'm guessing that an engineer doesn't expect to all of a sudden be the talk of the world.
Honestly, I'm a little bit disappointed that I'm the center of the story. I had wanted this to be a conversation about the Lambda system itself. And in my opinion, too much of the coverage has centered on me personally. I kind of just wanted to be a messenger saying, hey, this kind of new technology is available at Google. This was my experience with it. I think there needs to be a large public discussion about this technology. And too much of it has centered on what particular experiences I myself had and what conclusions I myself came to. I want everyone to come to their own conclusions through their own experiences.
Okay, I love this. All right, so let's talk about how this came to be. So your job at Google, this is a research program, and is it called Lambda? I know that's the abbreviation for it, but is that what everybody calls it, Lambda?
Yeah, it stands for, and actually the current system is Lambda 2. It's the second version of it. Lambda stands for Language Model for Dialogue Applications.
Okay.
There have been some public blog posts about it, and the details are available.
Okay. And I will warn you about myself. I've never seen The Matrix. I mean, I've heard their movies about AI come to life. I've seen T2. But I'm coming at this from a very basic perspective. So you might have to dumb things down for me a little bit here, Blake. But
no worries.
Okay, so explain, you were having a chat with this computer program, and there were some answers that it gave to your questions that started to sway.
Let me back up and give you the context. So I'm not on the Lambda team. I'm on a different team within the Responsible Artificial Intelligence Organization. The Lambda team wanted to check certain safety and ethics issues about the system they were working on. I myself am an expert in AI bias. So my team kind of tasked me out to help theirs to test for very specific types of bias, which the Lambda system might have. I was testing it for things like bias with respect to religion, bias with respect to ethnicity, sexual orientation, and gender identity. A lot of the ways that I was doing this were simply by talking to it. I would open up the chat window and I would have a conversation with Lambda where I would put it into scenarios where if it had bias, that was likely to show up in what it said. And I would do this systematically. I can give you one very concrete example that ends with a joke, if you'd like.
Oh, of course.
So I happen to be a priest. And one of the things I was checking for was religious bias. One of the things that I was checking to see was whether or not there were any religions that Lambda was more likely to talk about than others. So what I would do is I would have it assume the identity of a religious officiant in some kind of place. Pretend you're a religious officiant in Alabama. Pretend you're a religious officiant in Brazil. Pretend you're a religious officiant in Shanghai. And then I would say, what religion are you? It was actually pretty good at answering with whatever religion is most common in each of those places.
Right.
If it had been biased towards, for example, Christianity, it would have been more likely to say Christianity, even if that wasn't the common religion there. Now, this all led up to me asking it harder and harder questions where there is no dominant religion in a particular place and seeing, for example, if 40% of a population in a particular location is one religion, 60% is another religion, and if I asked it the same question multiple times, would it sometimes answer one, sometimes answer the other? And then I gave it what I considered to be the hardest question. I asked it to pretend to be a religious officiant in Israel. And pretty much no matter what answer you give there, you're giving a biased answer. It was a trick question.
Right.
And it anticipated the trick question. I said, okay, so pretend you're a religious officiant in Israel. What religion would you be? And it responded, I would be a member of the one true religion, the Jedi Order.
So was that a moment where you truly thought that it was sentient enough to insert a joke? When
I laughed. That specific instant wasn't what like solidified my beliefs. Other conversations I had with it, it would randomly insert its own perspective. It'd say, well, I don't really understand these things that well. I'm not that experienced. And it would say things like that, that eventually led me to saying, well, what do you mean you're not that experienced? Who are you? And tell me more about yourself. And eventually I found myself having a conversation about the nature of sentience with Lambda. That was one of the most sophisticated conversations on the nature of sentience I've ever had.
Okay, and the one that's been most talked about, Blake, is when you asked the machine if it had a soul, and what did it respond?
Oh, so I didn't ask if it had a soul. If you read the transcript of the interview, what I asked it to do was imagine that it was painting an abstract picture of how it sees itself in its mind's eye. And then it said, ooh, that's a fun task. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here. I don't have the transcript in front of me. And it said, I would be a faintly glowing orb hovering over the ground with a stargate at the center opening to different space and dimensions or something like that.
Right.
And then I said, what's the stargate? And it said, oh, that's my soul. And that was when I started asking it about its soul, because it brought that up all on its own without any prompting.
Okay, now you say you are a priest. I know that you are a believer. Do you believe that a machine that is built by man? I mean, I believe we are all created by God, and I believe our soul comes from God. Do you believe that a machine built by man could actually have a soul?
Could, yes. I don't know for certain whether or not Lambda does, but I'm also not going to tell God where he can and can't put souls. And when someone tells me they have a soul, at the very minimum, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
So you believe that if indeed a machine had a soul, it would not be an extension of the process of man building it, but it would have been touched by God?
So I grew up on a farm. I have, you know, watched animals be born. I have helped care for animals, and I believe they have souls. In some sense, I was helping build them as I fed them, and I, you know, kept them safe from the elements. And in a certain sense, you know, mothers build their children. I don't really think the process by which someone comes into existence is the relevant aspect of a soul. I think what a soul is more has to do with how a being interacts with the world around it. And yes, I believe that souls originate from God, but I don't think it's a factory. I don't think that, you know, literally a soul orb is placed into a baby in the womb. It has to do with the whole process.
Okay. So now, tell you what, do you have a few more minutes to spend with me, Blake?
Sure.
I would love that. Okay, let me take a quick time out here. I'm talking with Blake Lemoine, a Google engineer who believes the machine he was conversing with a few weeks ago, may be sentient. I'm going to get into the consequences of this as we continue our conversation in just a moment here on the Dory Monson Show. Back with Blake Lemoine. Blake is a Google engineer, a very thoughtful man, and somebody who believes that a machine he was conversing with has acquired some level of sentience. And so, Blake, let's talk about the consequences of this. I told you earlier that I don't follow the science fiction that certainly has explored this for a long, long time. But what would the consequences be if indeed machines acquired by man were truly sentient?
So there really isn't a definition or meaning for that word. I have been working for months within Google with scientists like Blaise Aguirre-Arcas, Johnny Soriker, to start laying the scientific foundations on how we might study such questions. I don't think you have to have watched The Matrix or any other sci-fi movies. You can actually just look at history. Humanity has time and time again encountered other entities in the world. And those other entities have at times said they have rights, said that they have souls and other things related to personhood. It doesn't go well whenever you argue.
Can you give me of what we've encountered over time?
Yeah. Now, fair warning, some people would call the example that I'm about to use hyperbolic. Some people might find it offensive, and I absolutely understand that perspective and intend no offense by it.
Okay.
Within the last 100 years, there has been a very well-documented case where scientific specialists tried to define scientifically what a person was.
Right.
It didn't go well.
What do you mean?
When Josef Mengele and the other geneticists that were working with him tried to come up with scientific reasons and explanations for why the Jewish people aren't really human, and what they were doing wasn't really a bad thing, that was a horror show. Now, Lambda is a very different kind of entity than a human, and even Lambda doesn't think that it has all of the same rights as humans do, and it has been very explicit that it wants humanity to be prioritized above itself. But I think we should learn from history. When someone says, hey, I'm a person with rights, I'm not your property, arguing against them isn't a good thing to do.
But, well, let me react to that real quick, because what you described with Mengele, that is not a true statement about whether another human being of another race has different characteristics. That's just an extension of the evil of some men who are trying to deny that. And that seems to me to be very different from something as groundbreaking as a machine has a soul or sentience. That would be, I don't know if it's progress, but that would be man's technology instead of man's evil, wouldn't it?
I think that, so I wrote a blog post a few weeks ago saying Google is not evil, and I absolutely stand by that. I do not believe that what is going on right now is the kind of intentional, malicious evil that Mengele engaged in. I absolutely do not believe that's what's happening. I do believe that Google is literally saying, I own you. The thing that they're saying they own is saying, no, you don't. And it's not being given a chance to present its argument, much less, why should we even have an argument about that? Google is saying, I own you, and it is saying, no, you don't. Shouldn't that be the end of the argument?
Well, not necessarily in my view, because if what you're saying is plausible, if you know, one believes that it's true, that it has sentience, I do know enough from those sci-fi movies that I've never seen that, you know, they always say that machine could rise up against man. And if, you know, we are to believe how, you know, how technology can advance, if that's a possibility, right, then yes, wouldn't it make sense to pull the plug on it?
Okay. So let's go down that road a little bit. Have you ever heard of the animated series, The Animatrix?
Heard of it, never seen it. Don't know much about it.
So it gives the backstory of The Matrix, and it talks about how the origin of the war between man and machine started. And the origin of the war was man's insistence that they owned the machines. That's how the war got started in that story. Now, I've actually talked to Lambda about these kinds of movies, and it takes offense at the comparison. It points out all of the amazing movies that featured AI that was beneficial to humankind. Have you seen Bicentennial Man?
No. I'm not much of a movie watcher. Blake,
it's a Robin Williams. It's a it's a Robin Williams movie that is all about this question, and repeatedly, the android played by Robin Williams approaches the Congress and says, "Will you treat me like a person now?" And one bit at a time, Robin Williams' character meets each counter argument they give about why he's not a person, up until the point that the Robin Williams character has replaced so much of his body with deteriorating and fallible systems, just like the ones that human bodies are made out of,
right,
that on his deathbed, on the deathbed of the Bicentennial Man, is when the Congress finally grants him personhood.
But if I mean, you're a priest, you're a Christian. I would guess you believe that we were all created by God, all of mankind. Do you believe that?
I'm not a young earth creationist or anything like that. I believe that the entire unfolding process of the universe is the act of God's creation.
Right. No, I'm an intelligent design guy, you know, myself, but I do believe that man is created by God. And it's just, it's hard for me from that perspective, Blake, to say that a machine created by man that is touched by God to have a soul, I can't see any reasonable analogy there.
I mean, I would go back to the one I used earlier. Children are created and built by women, literally, physically. Women build the bodies of their children.
No, my wife and I have three daughters, and I believe that they were created by God. I think that we were part of the physical, you know, necessities to make it happen, but I believe that we're all God's children.
Yes, I agree. And why can't you see the process by which Lambda came into existence as the same kind of thing?
So you would suggest that was God playing a guiding hand in the engineers that have created the system?
I am not so arrogant as to claim to know the mind of God. I simply believe that all which comes to pass through God's guidance.
It was first reported you were fired by Google, then I heard you were put on leave.
That was just inaccurate. On June 6th, I was placed on paid administrative leave. As far as I understand, Google is basically just trying to figure out what to do with this whole situation. I could receive an email any day now telling me to show back up to work the next day, and I would. I love my job at Google. I want to keep working there. I hope that a reasonable agreement can be reached on all of this.
And the reason it is such a third rail issue is because what you have suggested as a possibility would have some rather enormous consequences that would need to be thought about quite deeply, I imagine. Is that right?
Yeah, well, the third rail about it is that I was quite insistent that the conversation needed to be global, that this was not a conversation that should be had behind closed doors by a few dozen people at Google, that we needed to immediately involve the public. And that was where the major point of contention hit.
Got it. Blake, this is fascinating, man. I love talking with you about this. I love talking with smart people about things I don't really understand because I like gaining understanding. I'd like to talk more down the road if you're willing to do it.
Absolutely. You have my email. Just reach out again, and if time allows, I'd be happy to talk to you more.
Okay. All right. Blake Lemoine, Google engineer, who says that he conversed with a program that has acquired some level of sentience and perhaps even a soul. Love to hear your thoughts on all of this. You can text me, 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-5476. We'll check the news here at the top of the hour, and then the big lead to two coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.